Okay. So, Rav Amital was very successful at using the genre of stories to convey ideas. But he was also very, very enchanted with songs, and he sung a lot with us, and we gather with him and sing at Tishas, and sometimes Friday night he teaches a song in the Cheder Ochel, Simchas Torah night, would be a special gathering by invitation only in his son-in-law's house. Always managed to scrape together an invitation to sit at a tish with a lot of vodka and a lot of drink, and he teaches us these songs. So how about a story about a song? We're not just here to tell stories about songs, but what do songs do for us? So I think a lot of us feel that songs are very emotional. They trigger certain very deep spiritual / emotional moments. There's a collectivism in song. When you're learning by yourself. With your chavrusa, you're generally aware that you're in a base medrash with a lot of other people, but when you're singing, there's a bonding of emotions because the song unites people in a way that cognitive information can't. And I think there's been an explosion of Jewish music over the last, certainly, 30, 40 years in a way that Rav Amital certainly wasn't living through. And a lot of the music is based on nicer tunes, more deeply spiritual tunes, more tunes that catch you, tunes that inspire you. And there's more of a turnover. We turn over from song to song more quickly. If you go back 50 years, people sang the same songs for 50 years. I'm not necessarily supporting them, just describing it. And I think also, and I've noted this a lot, especially in Chutz La'aretz, there's a great emphasis on the music and less of an emphasis on the words. If you look at some of the songs in Israeli songs, or some of the more songs that have come out of Israel, the tunes aren't that catchy. They're not even tunes, but the words are words that are very powerful. So for Rav Amital, what did a song mean? It wasn't so much the tunes, but it was the associations that songs conjure. And therefore, songs have to be deep, deep songs that you sang repetitively, repeatedly, and for many years, and that were part of our history and part of our lore. So the song experience that I think a lot of people have today with quick turnover of songs, and what's the newest song, and what's the latest song, and with tunes that are more powerful than necessarily than the words that are associated with it, I think it's very different than the songs Rav Amital had in mind and the songs that he taught us. And he'd teach us these little ditties over Shabbos that barely had tunes. He would sit there at the table over Shabbos and get frustrated when we couldn't follow because these were songs that... And they were just like, bum, 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 bum. These were not any tunes, but these were just words. And he would... Tishas, we have to repeat it after him. And so one of his most famous stories about a song, which I think conveys what he saw in a song, was about a Moser. A Moser is, was someone in town who rats out Jews. Before we enter the age of democracy, so most governments were capricious, or most governments were arbitrary, and they were stilted against Jews. So in order to survive, we had to lie. In order to survive, we had to cheat. Because we're not cheating a system. There's no system. We're cheating the cheats. So a lot of Jews today have a hard time transitioning democratic environments in which we all follow the rule of law. And of course, in our day, you're not a moser if you hand over information about a Jew. You're participating in democracy that ultimately is protecting the interests of every human being, including Jews. So, but in the old days, the greatest crime you could commit was to be a Moser. So the Moser one day walks out into the city square and they decide to get really angry at him. And this Rav Amital told us this song, the story, when we weren't singing well enough one Friday night. He wanted to encourage us to sing better at a tish or I forget when. So they all gathered in the city square and they looked at the Moser and they said, Amalek, Amalek. They all started shrieking at him, you're Amalek, you're Amalek, you're ratting out Jews. So this Moser felt very insulted. So he went to the local sponsors, Goyish sponsor. So in Yiddish lore, the sponsor of a Moser, or the irrational, persecuting, local, gentile authority, is called the Poyer. It's a Yiddish word, the Poyer. The Poyer is the local non-Jewish governor. So the Moser went to his sponsor, the local Poyer, and he said, the Jews, they're verbally abusing me then. He didn't talk in 21st century language. Me too, but the Jews, they're hurting my feelings. They're saying that I'm a Amalek. So the Poyer made a decree that you can't say the word Amalek within a 10-foot radius of this person. So he walked down to the street the next day, all happy and confident. No one can call him Amalek anymore. And the Jews are eyeing him. They're all gathered, all the Jews, him, shoulder to shoulder. They're waiting for him to come out. And they look at him, and he looks at them, and they say, Zakef Gadar, which is the first word of Parshas Amalek. So he gets really insulted, runs to the par and says, they're saying the word Zakhor, which is the first word of Parshas Amalek. They're calling me Amalek again. So the Parah made a decree, you can't say the word Zahar within a 10-foot radius. So he walks out all confidently, preening around the next day. What are the Jews going to do now? I've got them. And they all gather, they make eye contact, and they see him, and they go, Zakef Gadol, Zakef Gadol. And he's really furious. Runs to the Parah, they're saying Zakef Gadol, which is a musical incantation on top of the word Zahar, which is the first word. They call me Amalek. So the Parah makes a decree, you can't say the two words Zakef Gadol in 10-foot radius. Next day he comes out, they've got nothing on him. He's cornered them. They look him in the eye. Make contact, start smiling at him, and they go, ay, 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 ay. So he runs back to the Parah and says, they're saying, ay, 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 which sounds like Zakef Gadol, which is musical incantation on top of, which is the first. Parah says, I'm not, I can't make a decree that the Kirin go, ay, 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 within a 10-foot radius. So Ravami Tosa said, you see, the Jews have the ability to convey the neshama of a song even without words. So he said, start singing, because we're singing very, very weakly, because the song had no words, and sometimes it's harder to latch onto a song without words. So he said, start singing. So this is probably the most famous song story, but I would say that for Avital, it wasn't really the tune as much, and it wasn't really the social experience, but it was that songs carry very deep associations, and the more entrenched the songs are, the more deep the associations. So here's a perfect story, because the song was associated with the word Zachar, with the word Zakef Gadol, with Amalek, and that's what was so powerful. About 20 years ago, we gathered in Rav Yosef Tzvi Rimon's house in Alon Shvat to celebrate Rav Amital's 70th birthday. So all the staff and their wives were invited. And we went around a circle, and everyone had to tell their favorite Rav Amital story. So everyone told their story. It was a little intimidating, like whose story seemed to be better, story competition. And then Tova Lichtenstein told the following story. I'll never forget it. Tova said that the most inspiring moment of her life was that Rav Amital had a very, very difficult time after the 73 war and the eight boys who were killed. Really, he lived the loss personally. He felt like it was his children. It wasn't just the loss of the eight boys, but a lot of other boys were badly injured and damaged and seriously hurt and went through hospital. People were burnt in their tanks. It was a very hard time. He basically gave Rav Aaron the keys to the yeshiva and said, you take over the yeshiva. I can't run the yeshiva anymore. I can't function. And really, and Rav Aaron in his hasbid for Rav Amital talked about how Rav Amital was the first Rosh Yeshiva to really live what in Hebrew called the shchol, the loss of a child. He really lived shchol. He really brought shchol from parents to Rebbeim. The Rosh Yeshiva has to feel it also. And it's a very, very meaningful part and a traumatic part of his life. So anyway, so now it's Purim 1974. And Purim 1974 was the first time that the boys who had been to battle came back to the yeshiva, because we think the 73 war ended in October, November. It really lasted months and months and months till things settled down, till it was safe to return from the front. So the war ended, I think, sometime in November, but late October. But the boys who had left yeshiva on Yom Kippur, they left Matzah Yom Kippur, after saying Tfilas Yom Kippur, they literally left, and many of them didn't return. And here they were for the first time back, and it was a very traumatic moment for them, back in yeshiva, but without eight of their friends and without so many others who had been badly maimed and damaged and injured. So they were sitting in the yeshiva on Purim. And what is the Purim? You're going to laugh and sing and dance. And this is the first time. It was very raw. It was very traumatic. So they were all sitting there not knowing what to do. And Tova said she remembers sitting there not knowing what to do. And Rav Amital came in and sat down with the boys on the floor and started singing Purim song with them, a slow Purim song. And evidently in the shtetl, there were a series of songs that melodically shifted from one song into another. So you went from Purim to this, from Shoshanis Yaakov to this song, to this song, to this song, to this song. Slight melodic segues. And somehow the song makes its way back to Kol Nidre, because Purim is Yom Kippurim. And they would sing this in the shtetl, evidently, where you'd sing the song and melodically make your way back to Kol Nidre and then end up singing Kol Nidre on Yom Kippur. Now, I'm sure they sang that song many times in the shtetl, but evidently, Tova said, that Rav Amital sat with these boys who had last been in yeshiva on Kol Nidre, and now were Purim, and he literally took them back to Kol Nidre, and everyone was sitting there bawling and crying and shrieking. Like, it was really a catharsis for them to go from Purim back to Kol Nidre, but melodically. So, and again, these were not top 10 songs or catchy tunes by Shrekki or by these are very, very slight, nuanced songs, not really musically captivating, but their deep associations. And in this case, the association was going back from Purim all the way back to Yom Kippur. So Rav Amital wasn't really about the catchiness of the tune or the spirituality of the song. It's very much the association that it elicited within you. The song that you sing a lot in different contexts. And they tell us that in Hungary, they would take him out to the forest and they would teach him the Mashiach song. And the boys really believed that if you sang the song, as they were told by their little cheder teachers, if you sang the song with enough kavana, the Mashiach would come. He says, he remembers this little kid looking up at the trees and thinking, Mashiach's coming, Mashiach's coming, he's going to hit those branches. There's a little, I'll show you for a da 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 da. So this weren't, it was a very different musical experience than today, where we have these vishyamda, or these powerful tunes. It was very much, I'll call them ditties, they weren't even songs, but the association that he was able to create for us were really powerful songs. Okay?
Thank you, Rabbi.
You're welcome. Have a good day, everyone.